already, on his first day, he stopped the practice of allowing torture. The torture that existed, that we conducted from September 11th, 2001, to January 20th, 2009. He made steps to close Guantanamo Bay on his first day in office. He met with his generals to devise a plan to get us out of Iraq in 16 months, as he promised. The world is hopeful and looking forward to this new man. Even Al-Qaeda appears to be flummoxed. They don't know how to deal with a person who has such worldwide support. He sent an envoy off to the Middle East. He called America's allies, leaders all around the world, to let them know that he was in charge. Here at home, 82% of Americans support the current new president. This is pretty astonishing. We've already had an election where Barack Obama won more votes than any Democratic candidate in 44 years. And Congress did even better. The Democrats beat the Republicans in the House of Representatives when you add up all the votes by more than a 10-point margin. America is ready for change. How will this new president do? How has he done in his first week of office? 1 week down, 408 to go. Well, he is putting out a stimulus package. As detailed in the Washington Post, shut right here, this is Sunday's Post, the Obama's recovery plan has a large number of different factors. We can show some of it right here on the screen on the Internet. But as I read it, the stimulus proposal, $820 billion, designed to create 4 million jobs with a spending timeline of 18 months. Maybe we can show the clip, if we could. This is the recovery plan, and the Washington Post lays it out in detail. You have everything from energy to health care to education to infrastructure, all of that in the new plan. Let's talk about some of that plan. We've got energy, doubling renewable energy generating capacity, building more than 3,000 miles of new or modernized electric transmission lines, weatherizing homes, guaranteeing health care for 8.5 million Americans who lose their jobs, increasing federal assistance to protect 20 million people at risk of losing Medicaid eligibility, computerize all Americans' health records within 5 years, renovate and education 10,000 public schools, tax cuts to make college more affordable, doubling the size of the Head Start program, infrastructure, it's not just bridges, it's enhancing security at 90 major ports, 1,300 wastewater projects, 380 drinking water projects, repairing and modernizing thousands of miles of roadways. For Republicans, you've got tax cuts. Not just the tax cuts he promised of $1,000 for 95% of working families that he promised in the campaign. He appears to be delaying the end of the Bush tax cuts until the recession is over, extending the child tax credits to parents of 6 million more children, increasing food stamp benefits to more than 30 million, even allowing businesses to take their capital losses now instead of waiting until they have profits over the last 5 years. This is something which few Americans can oppose. 82%, as I said, have supported it. Who can oppose an agenda to get us out of recession, build jobs, build infrastructure? You'd have to be quite a curmudgeon. Well, I've got a curmudgeon sitting right over here to my left. His name is Mike Lane. He's my friend and colleague and the president of Intellifit Strategies. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it here, too. What's not to love? This is an aggressive plan to take on the horrific economy left by Obama's predecessor. You remember him. I think you're still pining away for him, right? It was George something? He's old news now. But the horrible economy that he left us, Obama has hit the ground running. How do you like his first week?
Well, I think he's hit the ground stumbling on the economy. And
why am I surprised you say that?
There are some things in there to like, Mark. I mean, there really are. I'm not one of those people who's going to sit here and tell you, no, absolutely no, we just need nothing but a free market recovery, although that will probably be a faster recovery than what President Obama is planning for us right now. But what I want to do is I want to work with a few of these things, okay? I want to take what he has that's going to help the economy, which is roughly half of what he's proposing. And the other half, it would be nice if we could just jettison it and get rid of it.
Yeah, you don't want
any like
health care for poor people or for children. Mark, I mean, that's a bad thing, right?
No, I want health care for children and poor people, but I want it to stand on its own. I don't want to pull a facade, you know, a charade on the American people and call this an economic stimulus.
But it is.
I don't, okay.
But it is. When you do the S-CHIP program, for example, State Children's Health Insurance Program,
right.
What you're doing is you're helping states provide health insurance for kids. Now, that money goes in the economy to doctors and hospitals and everything, just like any other money goes in the economy. But in addition to it, creating jobs, it also helps poor kids get health care.
You know what, Mark? Poor kids are getting health care anyway. There are any number of circumstances, even and including going to the emergency room and getting their health care. This is not going to create a single job. It's not going to be anything in terms of an economic stimulus. It may, on its own merits, be a good program that we should enact and move forward with, but it is not part of the economic stimulus any more than Nancy Pelosi's spending $250 billion on contraceptive aids is an economic stimulus.
$250 million.
Whatever.
Well, there's a huge difference because exactly what Republicans do.
Okay,
you take a tiny thing, $250 million is
why is it there?
1/3,000th. Of the proposal,
and, why is
and
it
that's
there?
What you're going to complain about. Talk about
I have
tail
a lot
wagging
more.
The dog.
This I have
is
a lot
a hair
more.
On the tail I to have, wag the dog.
Okay, so if it's just a hair wagging the dog, can you just agree we'll get rid of it right now?
You know what? Republicans used to say that they didn't like abortions, that they wanted abortions to be rare. And here is a chance to make abortions more rare, something that I would think Republicans and Democrats could agree on. But the real secret is Republicans claim to be pro-life, claim to be anti-abortion. What they really are is anti-sex,
but
that's why they don't want contraception.
But that's not President Obama's and Speaker Pelosi's argument. Their argument is not that it will reduce abortions. Their argument is that children are a cost, a burden on the state, and we want to reduce costs. In fact, I think the speaker yesterday on George Stephanopoulos' show said reduce costs 3 different times in a 1-minute response. They're not arguing that this is a life situation. They're not arguing that this will make abortions less ubiquitous.
As they will.
What they're saying is, you know what, we just can't afford to have children in America today. What's next, Mark, the handicapped? You know, I mean, can we afford to have...
Wait, don't they consume services too? Wait, just a second, Mike. I mean, it's one thing. I understand the pro-life position. I even respect the pro-life position, even though I don't share it. It's one thing to say that you don't want abortions. I understand that. I don't agree, but I understand it. It's quite another thing to say that contraception is somehow terrible for America.
It's not terrible for America. In fact, it's good for America. It just is not an economic stimulus. Why are we putting this stuff into an economic stimulus bill? Let's make this an economic stimulus bill. Let's put Americans back to work, and let's argue about this other $500 billion that the president's trying to slip through there on other things.
$820 billion. If you subtract the condoms that you don't like, you have $819.75 billion.
It's not just the condoms that I don't like, Mark.
It's not just. And you know what? Condom manufacturers, you know, they have jobs too. So,
you know what, Mark? It's not going to create a single job.
If you put money in the economy, of course it is.
It won't create a single job.
Of course it is.
No.
Whether it's condoms or health care, people make these things. There are people in these industries that create condoms or that are services, doctors, nurses. All of them have jobs. All of them get more money, and they spend it. It hardly matters whether it's a doctor or a manufacturer of cars. The difference is that this is something that would do an additional thing. It would help prevent abortions, which I would think you'd support.
You know what? I have every interest in reducing the amount of abortions in America, and this kind of family planning aid may indeed be a very good thing. It is not an economic stimulus.
It is because spending is an economic stimulus.
No. Consumer spending is the economic stimulus. Maybe that's where we ought to get this discussion going. What is the way to get us out of here? Is it government deficit spending that will burden our children for decades and decades with the $3-5 trillion that we'll ultimately wind up spending on this? Or is it consumer spending, which the retraction of consumer spending is what drove us into this recession, and it's going to be consumer spending that drives us out of the recession? Shouldn't we put more money in the hands of consumers and let them spend it rather than have the government burden our children with debt for the next 50, 60, 70 years?
Mike, a dollar is a dollar is a dollar. And there's something that economists call the multiplier effect. If the government spends a dollar on anything, maybe not in Iraq. Okay, if you spend a dollar on Halliburton in Iraq, that doesn't come home to America. But if you spend a dollar in America, whether it's on health care or manufacturing or, you know, energy or jobs or health care or education, all of these dollars, if it's education, it goes to a teacher. If it's health care, it goes to a doctor. They then have more money, and then they spend more money, and then that goes into buying Home Depot products. They just laid off thousands of workers, or Caterpillar tractors, they've just laid off a bunch of workers.
It multiplies. $1 goes a lot farther of what government's spending goes a lot farther than $1 because 90% of that's spent and then 80% of that is spent and it keeps going on and on and on.
All of us who took ECHO 101 understand the multiplier effect. A dollar turns over 7 times in the economy.
That's exactly
we
right.
All understand
that's
that.
That's good because I want to make sure you get it.
Okay, and I'm sure our viewers know that if they took ECHO 101 as well.
Maybe some didn't.
But you know what? Here's the point. A quote shovel ready project is still 18 months away from turning the shovel up.
No,
that's the fastest you're going to get it done. I mean, CBO just came out with their report. Congressional Budget Office, the one that you love, because, of course, anytime the Office of Management and Budget for the last 8 years developed a report, you always said it was cooked. You always said it was cooked. And the Congressional Budget Office, which you have absolutely been married to their report for the last 8 years, have said that in the next 2 years, less than 40% of this money is actually going to get into the economy. Now, if it takes that long... Of the full $820 billion to get into the economy. No, of government spending. Now, if you give a family a tax cut of $100, how long do you think it takes the mother of those children to jump in the car and drive down to Target and buy them new clothes? I submit it's going to take about 18 minutes, not 18 months.
Well, terrific. Then I'm sure you like the proposal to cut taxes by $1,000 for 95% of working families.
You know what? We really need...
You're for that, right?
This whole thing should be tax cuts. The whole thing should be tax cuts.
See, here's the problem.
Get the money into the economy and get it there now, because we have the example of the New Deal. The government spending to get us out of the Depression in the New Deal absolutely fell flat.
That's not true.
FDR's Treasury Secretary himself, after 7 years, said, and I quote, you know, we've been spending money like mad for 7 years, and it hasn't helped. What got us out of the Great Depression? It was the mobilization and industrialization leading up to World War II.
I understand.
That's what got us out of the Depression.
That's one historical theory. Many economists argue the contrary. Here's the heart of it. Fiscal stimulus, again, Econ 101 works. And another thing from Econ 101 that I'm sure you remember, Mike, but maybe some of our listeners don't know, is that every dollar of government spending goes further than tax cuts. Because if it's tax cuts, particularly to rich people who don't need it, they put it in their bank accounts and it goes up. If you give tax cuts to poorer people or you do government spending, every single dollar is spent. And a lot of this money is on things we need, infrastructure, bridges that were falling down in Minnesota, levees in New Orleans, a green economy to get us off of foreign oil. This is stuff that doesn't just help stimulate the economy, it helps us for the future. I know you're going to want to respond. Our listeners may want to respond, too. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm reading the Washington Post about all the wonderful things in this stimulus package, everything from financing clean energy initiatives to providing better health care for children, to helping with Pell Grants for kids to get an education. All of these things, from 3,000 miles of electric transmission lines to 1,300 wastewater projects, to massive tax cuts for individuals, for businesses. This is the kind of thing we need to stimulate the economy, I think. But my curmudgeon here to my left, I know you disagree, Mike Lane. What's wrong with this?
We need more market, more consumer-driven decisions, less government-driven decisions. The government can't sit here and pick winners and losers. President Obama and Speaker Pelosi are making a huge mistake in some of the roads they're going down. They were right when they had larger tax cuts in this. And then, of course, President Obama went up to the Hill and he briefed the Democrats on the tax cuts that he wanted in that. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi went to him and said, oh, no, President Obama, you know, that time President-elect Obama, you don't understand. Tax credits for job creation is a Republican idea. You need to take that out of this, lest the Republicans get credit for that. And what happened the very next day? Tax credits for job creation disappeared completely, even though President Obama had campaigned for a year on the idea of tax credits for job creation.
You know, I don't recall them saying, lest the Republicans get credit for
you
it.
You weren't in on the private meeting, Mark. You were there.
How else do you
think they convinced President Obama to renege on a promise that he had campaigned on for one full year, to provide a tax credit for job creation here in the United States? And it was gone in 24 hours after the Washington Post reported that the Democratic caucus rebelled at the concept.
I can't
How else
tell
did it
you,
disappear?
Mike, what joy it gives me to hear you defend President Obama's proposals and to argue they need to be enacted as soon as possible in Congress. Wow. I'm just glad that you recognize that he was right on
this. I'll tell you what a big stimulus package would be.
The specific thing that I actually didn't like about the proposal, and I'll admit it, I think Congress was right on this one and Obama was wrong, is the idea that you give tax cuts to any company that basically says, not just created a job, but we kept a job. We kept a job we were going to throw away. That, to me, seemed rife, frankly, for fraud and abuse. Someone could say, oh, we kept a job, but they didn't really keep a job. That shouldn't be the way you devise a tax cut. So while I support the principle of having tax cuts for keeping jobs, that particular mechanism I didn't think was the strongest. And I think that Barack Obama, unlike the current, unlike the former resident of the White House, is someone that can recognize good ideas when he hears them, discuss with others, and even recognize sometimes that maybe he doesn't have the best way of approaching someone. What an idea to have a president that actually is willing to be flexible and to negotiate. What a great new president of the United States.
I will agree with you 1,000% that a tax credit for a job saved was a particularly bad idea.
See? And it's gone now.
Not a Republican idea. That was a Democratic idea.
That one you blame on the Democrats.
Republicans were pushing for a tax credit for a job created. That is easily provable, easily demonstrable.
Even that one's, while not as bad as the other, is not so demonstrable. I mean, sometimes you have to argue it was a job that was going to be created that wouldn't otherwise have been created without the tax credit.
Why?
It's not easy.
No. In this economy, you create a job, you get the tax credit. You don't have to prove that it was something that was not on drawing boards. In this economy, you go for it.
In any case, what Obama is showing, I think, and what the Democrats believe, is that the market hasn't always been right. If the market is always right, then obviously credit derivative swaps were a great idea. Subprime mortgages unregulated were a terrific idea, and the economy is blooming right now. It's not. And the reason it's not is because the market doesn't know how to regulate itself. Unfortunately, it should. I wish it would, but it doesn't. And the last 8 years have proven that it doesn't. What Obama is doing is directing resources to where the market should be, specifically energy. We are owned and controlled by Saudi Arabia and China and Venezuela and all our enemies who own us and control us because of our dependency on foreign oil. The American auto manufacturers in Detroit have done nothing to fix us out of this. Jimmy Carter started some proposals in the 70s, and Ronald Reagan got rid of them in the 80s. We need to give off foreign oil, and this is not just to help us economically, but frankly to help us militarily, strategically, to help our national security. We need to get away from foreign oil. And if the local markets won't do it, it's up to the President of the United States and the Congress to do the right thing, even when the markets won't.
Let me address two things on the market. First of all, the market shows that it is responding to the various factors that hit it right now. The great news this morning is that real estate sales are up a whopping 6.5% this month. Why are they up? Because the prices had come down off the bubble far enough with the 15% decline that now everybody's jumping in and saying, oh, this is a great opportunity. And housing prices are starting to stabilize, and the 6.5% increase in housing sales for this month is an unheard of gain in the real estate market. Let's see if we can keep that up. But let me talk about your energy thing for just a second. The government should not be in the business of dictating where the market should go the way you just explained. The government should be in the business of letting the market go where it wants to go, because the market will find where you can have economic activity that will be profitable. And in a capitalistic society, we want to make profits. We want to have healthy companies. We don't want to have companies like Freddie Mac, which after being bailed out to the tune of $14 billion 3 months ago and saying, thank you, Hail Mary, everything is fine at Freddie Mac now, they've just come back and they've asked for another $16 billion today, and they're going to ask for another $16 billion in another 6 months.
That's not what we want.
We want healthy companies. We don't want sick companies. And the market will create the opportunity for those companies to be healthy. That's what we want.
This is something further than that, Mike. This is national security. This isn't just a matter of helping us with a stimulus package. We need to get off foreign oil, and that, let me
yes,
say something.
Yes, absolutely.
And if we don't,
absolutely.
Who pays for it? The American taxpayers.
Absolutely.
We went to war in Iraq for oil. You may disagree with that. I insist it's the only reason that makes any sense. We are in the Middle East. We care about the Middle East for oil. That's why we don't care about Africa. That costs money. billions of dollars, far more than Obama is spending to make them do the right thing. Sometimes when it affects national security, it is the government's role to do the right thing, even when private enterprise does not. The most defensible things that he's doing, the ones that I can't say anyone would argue against, are the ones to bring us to a green energy economy.
Okay. First of all, you're the only person I've heard argue that we went to war for oil. Even your own party doesn't support that concept. They will make all kinds of, they will make all kinds of allegations against George Bush as to why we went to war, but going after oil was not one of them. And I don't know, you know, Mark, if we wanted their oil, we've been there for 6 years now. We could have taken it. We haven't done that, okay? So we didn't go to war for oil. Now, why should
well,
President
it's just,
Obama...
It's because WMDs...
Why should President Obama...
I just never understood the reason.
Why should President Obama pick and choose windmills versus solar versus
Why? Because they're clean.
No,
they're renewable.
No, but
because they don't ruin our environment. Because they don't cause global warming and because they don't give money to foreign dictators.
Okay.
That's why.
And so President Obama is going to invest $825 billion in these technologies couldn't even survive in the market. And he's going
Do you know how they could survive in the market?
He's going to spend the equivalent... I don't even know how much money this is. Let's talk about, you know, his
jobs. It's about $100 billion.
No, it's a lot.
It's $100 billion.
Why shouldn't the market determine whether or not windmills or solar
or
geothermal? And the worst idea I've ever heard is the biomass. Do you know why food's gone up 30% in the last 2 years?
Because everyone wants switchgrass. You know, I don't.
Because we're taking all these foodstuffs that we used to use for food, and now we're creating some sort of biofuels out of it, which is driving the cost. Have you bought bread or milk lately?
I will agree with you. Using corn for ethanol is a mistake. I'll agree with you.
It's not just corn. It's soybeans. It's everything.
Switchgrass and other things work well. But
you're taking productive cropland out of production, and you're
production.
Yes.
We have a very large country with a whole lot of farmland. And you know what? Farmers in America, I'd love them to see them working hard and doing something to help our economy rather than living on subsidies. We have lots of land, and lots of farmers will be very happy for this. This isn't land that's out of production.
You're right. It's land that's in production. It's being switched because we still have that ridiculous farm program that won't let them farm on all their land.
The one thing we've ever agreed on, Mike, is getting rid of the farm program.
We invest in windmills, we invest in solar, we invest in this. What happens if it turns out that the $100 billion we put into windmills is not where the future is because it's an unproven technology
and
we don't know anything about it? It's a totally unproven
technology. Europeans use windmills to finance things. Brazil uses biomass.
If it worked, we would have used it already.
Let me tell you why that kind of argument.
It doesn't work.
If it works, we would have used it already. The market would have already done it if it worked. This is the reason it doesn't work. We do not have a free market in the United States and in the world.
Well, then let's go to one. Then that's the answer.
Why don't we have a free market? Because there's this group. You may have heard of it. It's called OPEC.
It's called Democrats in Congress.
Of petroleum exporting countries. And what did Saudi Arabia do when the price of oil fell through the floor?
Well, they cut production.
They cut production.
Right.
That's right. Because they're artificially manipulating the market. They rig it high when we're not ready for it. We get $4 of gasoline. Then we go to recession. Then it's artificially low. They are playing with the market just like Enron used to play with the market for electricity. We need to have a stable base of renewable energy. This takes time. You have to build an electricity grid. You've got to be prepared for the 21st century.
And if
oil is the last century.
And if the Democrats in Congress would let us drill for our domestic oil resources and our offshore oil resources,
we
would have 50 years of fuel that we wouldn't need to depend
on. Talk about
anything.
Shovel ready. They're not even ready in the next 4 years.
They'll be ready in 3 years.
I want to invite our listeners to join in the debate. You're welcome to take sides, to agree with Mike or me, or to tell us both we're wrong. What do you think of the first look of the Obama administration? It is 888-488-MARK, toll free, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back. We're back. And, Mike, I want to draw you to, a commemorative book put out by the Washington Times. I want to know if you're going to get it. Apparently, it's only $24.99 plus $6 of shipping. It's called W, The Legacy of President George W. Bush. Let me read what the Washington Times, Reverend Sun Yat-moon's newspaper, is saying about W. Here's your chance to be one of the very first to own this compelling coffee table-styled book about an extraordinary president in turbulent times. W is packed with gripping pictures and stories, all beautifully presented in his historical keepsake presentation of all 8 years of the presidency of George W. Bush. Be the first To own this memorable book and be proud to share it with your friends and family brings a tear to your eye. All the memories, Katrina, two wars, September 11th, the greatest economic problem since the Great Recession, the Great Depression. You going to go out and buy this book, Mike?
You know what, Mark? It'll make a great Christmas gift for my mother, who will absolutely love it. And I'm sure that by next fall, I'll be able to pick it up for $6.99. And that will be my contribution to stimulating the economy.
I think you'd be lucky to get it. You'd maybe even get it for $2.99. Here's the thing. I think that many Republicans, as shown by this book right here, are living in the past, pining away for the days when Dick Cheney could go down and cherry-pick intelligence at the CIA. It seems to me the Republicans are declaring war on this administration before it's even started. Obama's been president nearly a week. And already, Rush Limbaugh goes on air and says, I hope he fails. They tried to stop Attorney General Eric Holder. It's unprecedented to do this. They delay the proceedings a week, not because they have any real problem with him, because they don't want him to prosecute anyone in the Bush administration for war crimes. Today, apparently, Timothy Geithner was approved. The Republicans appeared to like him, but now, on basically a party-line vote, which is a few votes one way or the other, they are determined already to obstruct this administration. Is that a fair characterization, and are you also so determined?
You know, Mark, the question is, what is the level of the opposition? Is it principled or is it political?
Let's start with Rush Limbaugh. I hope he fails.
Well, let me start with Secretary Geithner, who was confirmed about a half an hour ago, as if our listeners were listening to some other shows. To have 35 or more votes against a guy to head the Treasury Department who apparently cheated on his taxes for a number of years is not an unheard of reason to vote against a guy.
No, it's not. But here's the thing.
That seems to me to be a principled
opposition.
It's not.
I mean, to be fair to Treasury Secretary Geithner, and I think I can call him that now.
You can. He was actually sworn in within 5 minutes after being confirmed.
There we go. So with due regards to him, it was a complex thing. It had to do with the International Monetary Fund and self-employment taxes, and because the IMF doesn't withhold because they have a lot of international employees, not just Americans. It was a complex thing. I completely agree with you that the person who should head which is the boss of the IRS, should have done the right thing, absolutely. But here's the thing that surprises me. Geithner admitted his mistake, and at the hearings, all the Republicans who at that time decided to like the guy because they thought, well, he's out of the Bush administration and he'll do the right thing, they basically let it go. They didn't push him there. Now, at the last minute, someone flipped on the partisan switch. I don't know whether it was Rush Limbaugh or Mitch McConnell or somebody else, and said, go get this guy. If they had a problem with him, they would have raised it.
You know, they didn't go get him. They just stood up and cast their vote when the time came. As I said,
honestly, is the least.
There are only 35 votes against him. I know for a fact one Democrat did vote against him, perhaps more. So that meant there were at least three Republicans who voted for him to get up to the 60. We don't know where the math is.
Geithner's the least of it. Let's talk about.
I'll be glad to talk about Rush Limbaugh.
He said quite clearly in four words.
I hope he fails.
Referring to President Obama, I hope he fails.
Right.
Who does Limbaugh speak for, and does he speak for you?
No, Limbaugh speaks for himself, and he'll make that point clear over and over again.
He's got a lot of demo hats that follow along with him. Well, they're the ones still pining away for Dick Cheney and buying this book.
You know, he averages 15 million listeners a week, which puts him into an average of 3 million a day. It's a three-hour show, which puts him into an average of maybe 1.5 million listeners at any given time or something like that.
I do like to hear you deprecate influence.
He's by far the most popular and most successful radio show host in the world.
He is your conservative leader. He is
a conservative spokesman, but he doesn't speak for the Republican Party. He never has spoken for the Republican Party.
Who does? I'm not sure right now.
Well,
John McCain.
Right now we have a chairman. His name is Mike Duncan. He speaks for the Republican Party. Mike Duncan.
Mike never heard of him.
He's been chairman for 4 years.
Really? For 4 years?
For 4 years.
Interesting.
Now the good news is.
Did he do trash collection?
We will have a new.
Was he an Arabian horse trader?
We will have. No, he wasn't.
Oh, okay. Because I thought all your best people were.
He was actually a national banker.
Okay.
We will have a new chairman sometime this week is the meeting of the Republican National Committee. My personal favorite is Michael Steele. I hope that he is elected the new chairman. But there are six people who are vying for this. So, you know, we'll see who comes out. Other than the chairman of the party, of course, you have the ranking minority leader in the House, whose name is John Boehner and the ranking minority leader in the Senate, whose name is Mitch McConnell. They are our spokesman.
Here's the point. Rush Limbaugh, I think, to many more Americans, is far more of a household name than not only Mike Duncan and Michael Steele, but also more than Mitch McConnell or John Boehner. Rush Limbaugh is frankly, after Bush, who's gone, and McCain, who's, I guess, going back to his Senate seat, he is seen as your Republican leader right now. And to Americans, they hear, I hope he fails. And I think they make it clear that the whole purpose of conservatives is not to make the country work, is not to get us out of recession, not to bring our troops home. It's to make Obama fail. That is your sole goal and reason for existing, right?
No. In fact, President Bush was quoted on several occasions as saying that he hoped President Obama succeeds.
That's true. That's true. But he's out of the way now. Rush Limbaugh is left.
That's true.
Bush is gone. He's in Texas.
That's true. I'm like Bill.
Packing up the Crawford set that he used as background for the last 8 years and moving down.
Unlike Bill Clinton, who forgot that he was supposed to get off the stage when his term expired, George Bush has gotten off the stage and will stay off the stage.
Now, so Rush Limbaugh is the one that people recognize as the leader of the conservatives.
Rush Limbaugh will tell you that he's not a Republican. Rush Limbaugh will tell you that he's a conservative. Rush Limbaugh
Bill
will
O'Reilly
tell you,
will tell you the same thing.
Rush Limbaugh will tell you he's not a newsman, that he's an entertainer. And I happen to, I don't listen to Rush all the time.
You don't have to defend Rush.
I am going to defend Rush.
You are.
Because I happen to have heard this one. I mean, I don't listen to Rush all the time.
Okay.
But I happen to have heard this one. And what's gone on is that the press has taken this out of context, and they haven't told you about what Rush was talking about. He didn't say, when you talk about what's Obama trying to accomplish, if Obama is trying to get us out of a recession, if Obama is trying to move us forward, if Obama is trying to keep us safe and secure, if Obama is trying to advance our interests nationwide, I and everybody else, Democrat, Republican, and even Rush Limbaugh support that. If you listen to his show last Thursday when he said that, he wasn't talking about Obama being successful in moving us forward. He wasn't talking about Obama being successful in moving us out of recession. He was talking about Obama being successful in nationalizing the economy. He was talking about Obama being successful in failing to pursue the war on terror. He was talking about all the things that Obama campaigned on, and he hoped he failed in those objectives. That's what he said, and I have to say, If it's a matter of nationalizing the economy and nationalizing the banks and nationalizing the auto industry and things like that, I hope President Obama fails too. I don't want to see an America where the government owns the means and terms of production in this country. That's called socialism.
I'm doing something that I must say I don't know that I've ever done before.
You're going to play a Rush Limbaugh.
I'm actually going to Rush Limbaugh's website.
Okay.
As scary as that is. And I'm going to find for you the context of the quote.
Go ahead, because I was listening to it that day, and I'm fairly confident that that's what he was talking about.
Well, let me read to you the context here.
Okay.
Here we are. What Obama's talking about is the absorption of as much of the private sector by the U.S. government as possible, from the banking business to the mortgage industry, the automobile business to healthcare. I do not want the government in charge of all these things. I don't want this to work. So I'm thinking of replying to the guy, okay, I'll send you a response. I don't need 400 words. I need 4. I hope he fails.
Exactly.
What Limbaugh is saying is he doesn't believe that – no, it's more than that. He's not saying – he's saying that government
– he's saying he doesn't want nationalization
stimulus.
Of the economy.
He's saying government fiscal stimulus may indeed
That's
help the economy. But I hope it fails because I don't want anyone to realize the truth, with the one that you learned Echo 101, that fiscal stimulus actually works. The stimulus packages actually work. If people learn that, then they'll understand that sometimes government spending is a good thing. That's why Obama hopes he fails, because he doesn't want the American public to know the truth. Economic stimulus works.
Rush Limbaugh came out with a very interesting bipartisan offer to the president today. Since the president singled him out by name last week and said that in a meeting with the Republican leadership that they have to stop listening to Rush Limbaugh because that's not the way things get done in America. Interesting that he would give Limbaugh that much press when, as I said, you know, at any given time only 1.5 million people are listening to him. I don't know why the president would want to single him out by name. But Limbaugh came out with an interesting proposal today. And that is that, okay, you want to be bipartisan, Mr. President? You got 53% of the vote. Republicans got 46% of the vote. And there was another 1% in there. We're willing to give you that 1% and call it 54-46. Now, you go ahead and design 54% of the stimulus package.
and, you know, go ahead and do the spending the way you want. We won't get in the way. We won't, you know, tell you what you're doing right. We won't tell you what you're doing wrong. Just go ahead and design 54% of the stimulus package your way, and let us design 46% of the stimulus package our way to do tax cuts.
Idea.
And wouldn't this be
a great
bipartisan
idea.
Approach?
You know, if we did it that way, if we actually let the majority of the American people decide who's president and everything based on those percentages, Al Gore would have been president over the last 8 years. We wouldn't have had September 11th. We wouldn't be in the economic trouble we're in now. Well, you know, it's a little old for that argument. George Bush squeaked by on the lowest, narrowest margin that any incumbent president has ever gotten in American history, and then he says, oh, this is a mandate here. I'm sorry, we have the mandate. We have the mandate with the largest popular vote for Obama for any president ever. The largest
only because
margin,
there were more people voting.
That's true, but
you know,
also the largest margin for any Democrat since Lyndon Johnson 44 years ago, and Congress did better. Congress, the margin between congressional Democrats and congressional Republicans was more than 10 points when you add up all the votes. This is a mandate, and we're going to take it, Michael.
Okay.
And I got to tell you, all these attempts to obstruct it are just going to make the American people mad.
I'll agree with 90%. The part I'll disagree with, it's not a mandate. 53% of the vote is not a mandate. 53% of the vote is not a mandate for anything. The same way it was not a mandate for George Bush when he claimed it was.
He didn't get 54.
Whatever,
he barely got 50.
It was not a mandate for him. It's not a mandate for Obama. Obama is the one.
He lost the election of 2000.
This is where I'm going to disagree with you now. Obama is the one who's coming in saying, we're going to be bipartisan. We're going to do this together. We're going to do everything.
He is.
And
this is a bipartisan stimulus package.
This
includes things that Republicans want, too.
He is not interested in anything that the Republicans have to say.
That is not true.
He's paying lip service to it.
That is not true.
He'll sit there, and when Eric Cantor, Minority Whip, went into his office at the president's invitation and was asked, what do you think? He made his presentation. Obama listened to it and said, well, that's really nice, but you know what? I won. I trump you on that. Meeting discussion over.
Renewable energy proposal.
That's what he said.
But Chris Van Hollen and Representative Zach Wamp, Republican of Tennessee, in this package, he's bipartisan. You're holding it up. 888-481.
Here again. The Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. We are debating Obama's first week as President of the United States. One down, Mike, and 408 to go. I'm looking forward to the 8 years of the Obama presidency. And I have to disagree with you to say that he's not reaching out to Republicans. In fact, he's reaching out so far that some on the left are concerned about it. Just to give you two examples, the one I mentioned very quickly before the break, he supports a renewable energy proposal that Chris Van Hollen, Democrat of Maryland, worked in a bipartisan fashion with Congressman Zach Wamp, Republican of Tennessee. I think even you wouldn't challenge the conservative credentials of Zach Wamp.
You know what? Zach Wamp is about as moderate as they get. Even my sister, who is a bleeding Democrat who comes from East Tennessee, votes for Zach Wamp because she thinks he's an acceptable Republican.
But Wamp is definitely
bleeding
a conservative
Democrat.
Only you would attack
my sister Zach
Wamp. But also everything.
And of course, Chris Van Hollen is as leftist as they get. So
Chris Van Hollen is a terrific representative.
He's as leftist as they get, right.
Maryland's
a leftist state.
You know,
fits right in.
You know, I love it. Now even moderate Republicans are too far to the left for you.
No. I would vote for Zach Wamp. I would vote for Zach Wamp. He's just not a conservative.
I know you miss him.
Zach Wamp is just not a conservative. He's a good Republican. He's not a conservative.
Maybe he could hire you to push his wheelchair around. I don't know. Anyway, let's... The other thing, of course, is these tax cuts for businesses, 5 years. These are things that Republicans wanted. Obama is reaching out to Republicans.
They're actually things that Obama campaigned on.
But there's
nothing in there. Look, Mark, he's had several.
And you're complaining that the president is doing what he campaigned to do? These are things that Republicans love as well as Democrats.
What I'm complaining about is that he's pretending he's being bipartisan. He's pretending there's outreach. There is no outreach. The stimulus package will be voted on Wednesday night in the House of Representatives. There will not be a single Republican idea in the entire thing. Every Republican effort to amend it will be rejected. And you know what? I don't care because you won the election.
That's right.
We are irrelevant, but don't pretend you're listening to us when you're not.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you one that he did not campaign on. Obama is, it seems to me at this time, it looks to me like he is not repealing the Bush tax cuts. He's going to let them expire in 2010. He's not going to repeal them now. This, I got to say, had he said that during the election, would have gained him votes because nobody likes, everyone likes a tax cut. But he is recognizing this is what Republicans want, and we're in a terrible recession. He is listening to Republicans. I got to give the guy credit. I want to move on, though, because it seems to me that Republicans are trying to obstruct him, totally apart from the economic stimulus package. The thing that really gets my goat is the decision by our inspector to delay for a week the confirmation of Attorney General designee Eric Holder. Now, this is interesting because Spector has basically said he supports Holder. He was a fine judge, respected member of the Clinton administration. You could talk about the Markovich pardon all you want, but there's nothing new here. He talked all about his mistake in the hearings, and after all, at the end of the day, that was Clinton that made the decision, not Holder. That's all. The only finger you can lay on the guy, and frankly, it's not that much, and there's nothing new here. The real reason why the Republicans are delaying Eric Holder is right here on page A8 of Sunday's Washington Post. Says right here, Bush doctrine stalls Holder confirmation. GOP wants no more investigations. And that's the truth. Eric Holder has said that while he will not criminalize differences in policy, he will go after people who broke the law. And Republicans don't want people who broke the law in the Bush administration to be prosecuted. They don't even want them to be investigated. They want to tear up all the emails, push all the torture tapes under the rug. They want to hide it. And Holder wants to enforce the law. So the Republicans are saying, if you want to enforce the law and the Constitution, we've got to do our best to try to obstruct you.
All right. First of all, I think that the Markovich pardon is a huge thing. You can't have a guy as Attorney General. And let me say, notwithstanding the problems that the Secretary of the Treasury has with his unpaid taxes and things like that, I would have voted to confirm him because I think he's the right guy at the right time in the right place for the right needs.
Most Republicans agreed.
There are a number of other cabinet appointees that I would vote against, but Holder tops the list of people I would vote against. Number one, Markovich was the second most wanted man in America.
I'm not going to defend the Markovich pardon. You're not going to get me to defend the pardon.
Okay.
Everyone from me to Clinton to Eric Holder agrees it was a terrible mistake. It was not the right thing to do. And Holder has pointed out exactly what he did wrong
and how much
he'd be a better man for. He learned from it.
And how much of Denise's rich money and contributions and things like that influenced the whole thing.
You're not going to get me to defend the pardon. But none of that personally went to Eric Holder.
The second thing is the Puerto Rican terrorists, the FALN. He was in up to his eyeballs in the pardon of the Puerto Rican terrorists. I think in this day and age, the last thing we want to do is be pardoning people who went into the House of Representatives with machine guns and shot it up and wounded 14, a number of members of Congress.
People that were pardoned. This was people in the group. Why not the people that were pardoned didn't actually do that.
You know what, Mark? If you're part of the group that commits the terror, you're the terrorist.
They were in jail for something like 20 years.
Eric Holder isn't up to his eyeballs on the pardon of
but
the Puerto Rican terrorists.
That's not the reason why this is happening. Now, Mike, as well as I do, there was a Senate confirmation hearing. They talked about Markovich. They talked about the Puerto Ricans. That was all discussed. All the Republicans, except for I think two, said, well, this is bad, but you understand your mistake. We're willing to get past this. The reason why, according not just to the Washington Post, but to a number of Republicans I can cite in this article, is because they don't want prosecutions of Bush officials that have done war.
No, it's not Bush officials.
That's the reason.
Why should, whether or not you consider waterboarding to be torture, we've had this debate before. I know for a fact waterboarding is not torture. You say that you think it is torture.
It's not torture.
Mark, I've been waterboarded in military training. It's not torture.
So executed Japanese for doing this thing that wasn't torture? We court-martialed Americans in the Spanish-American War?
I've been waterboarded.
Doing something that wasn't torture?
It is not torture.
I don't think they've been waterboarded.
It is not torture.
These people have been waterboarded.
It is not torture. Now, let me explain to you that the concern is the administration came up with a finding. It was a legal document which they legally created and said, okay, this you're allowed to do in these circumstances because this is what we want. Now, if you're an employee of the CIA and you're conducting the investigation and you're doing the interrogation and you have in your hand this finding by the Justice Department that says what you're doing is great and okay and no problem, and then 10 years later, the next administration comes back and wants to put you in jail for doing your job. What kind of administration is this that you're trying to create here, Mark?
Mike,
don't understand.
You forced me to take out my secret weapon.
I don't understand
the Constitution of the United
States. When a guy has a perfectly valid legal justification for trying to keep America safe and secure, if you're an employee of the CIA, that's all you have.
No.
What are you going to do with it, Mark?
The Constitution of the United States prescribed that what makes the law is things done pursuant to this document.
Right.
You can't make up law out of whole cloth. There is no power of the Office of Legal Counsel to make law.
And
there is no power
the CIA,
of the President to make law.
And the CIA
power,
interrogator has what? What?
I'm not talking about the interrogator.
What about, I'm talking about the interrogator.
I will let the interrogator go.
No, but
as long
Eric
as
Holder will
as
not
long
let
as
the
we put John
go.
Yu and Alberto Gonzalez and the people that ordered the interrogator
no.
to do the torture in jail,
Eric Holder will not let him go. He wants to put the interrogators in jail.
Mike,
he wants to have a witch hunt.
Mike.
And that's why Eric Holder cannot be confirmed.
This isn't about the interrogator.
It is. It's about
I
the
interrogator. I know your party wants to prosecute Lindy England at Abu Ghraib.
Right, then why
I don't want to prosecute
then
Lindy
why doesn't
You want to know who I want to prosecute? I want to prosecute the people that ordered her to do the torture, the people that
the
said
general,
it was
the general
I'm
who
talking
was in charge
about
of the whole
lawyers.
Thing. The general
I'm
in charge
talking
of the
about
whole
John
thing.
Yu.
I think
I'm
that
about
general
Roger
should
Gonzalez.
Be prosecuted as well.
No, it's not the general.
Yes. The general is guilty of dereliction of duty.
No. The Constitution of the United States says that there are laws passed by Congress, and the president can only act pursuant to those laws. Executive orders
right.
are not lawmaking authority by the president. They are only done pursuant to laws passed by Congress. When Alberto Gonzalez and John Yu drafted secret memos, they knew that their memos had zero basis in the law, had zero basis in the Constitution.
You know what, Mark?
They were officially to
that.
Allow torture.
You don't know that.
I do know that because I know the laws and I know the Constitution.
No, you haven't read their memo.
No one's allowed to read their memo.
And waterboarding is not torture.
More than waterboarding.
Waterboarding
you know
is not torture.
More than waterboarding.
You know that.
Let's talk about spying on hundreds of millions of Americans without a warrant.
Which Obama has now embraced, I understand.
That's not true. Which even the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Says
has ruled
against
as legal.
The law.
Has ruled as legal
no.
in a decision last August.
You're talking about the subsequent policy. I'm talking about the policy five years ago.
They ruled it legal.
I'm talking about the one where Attorney General Ashcroft was trying to trick into
the
signing.
The FISA court said it was legal,
about,
Mark.
No, you're talking about the recent policy, not the policy of 5 years ago. Here's the point. If it's legal, no one will be prosecuted. If it follows the law,
well, I'm not worried about that.
No one will be prosecuted.
You know what?
What's wrong with investigating, finding out what happened, finding out all those emails that were destroyed, bringing them, finding out if anyone did anything wrong. If they didn't do anything wrong, no one will be prosecuted. But if they covered it up, and you, as well as I know, the emails are mysteriously missing, the videotape of the waterboarding is mysteriously missing, a whole bunch of people have covered up evidence. And there's one thing we've learned from Watergate, is whether or not Richard Nixon ordered the Watergate burglary, I can't tell you, but there's no question that he covered it up. And covering it up is a crime. And if people in the Bush administration committed this crime, I want them to be prosecuted. Don't you?
You know what, Mark?
Will you agree with me on that?
I
that
hope.
Cover up is a crime and these people should be prosecuted?
I hope. No. Because.
Not for covering
no.
up? A
I'll
court
what,
ordered
no, no.
to preserve the emails
first
and they throw
all,
them away.
I'm not talking about the emails. That's a minor thing. Let's talk about the Attorney General's finding that enhanced interrogation techniques can be used.
Quickly, because
okay?
I've got 30 seconds.
I hope that you investigate this.
Good.
And I hope you expend every piece of political capital on it, because the American people want to go forward. They don't want to go back. There is nothing there, and this is our fastest ticket back to the White House. When you overplay your hand, I hope you do it.
Investigate, you find out what's going on, and there's nothing there.
I hope
don't
you do
prosecute it.
Please
it's
do.
Called due process.
Please do.
It's called open government.
Please do.
It is the future. It is the Obama administration.
Please do.
I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have comments on anything that I or my guests, follow me on my website. Thank you.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. It is the first week of the Obama administration. And this president has hit the ground running. Already, on his first day, he stopped the practice of allowing torture. The torture that existed, that we conducted from September 11th, 2001, to January 20th, 2009. He made steps to close Guantanamo Bay on his first day in office. He met with his generals to devise a plan to get us out of Iraq in 16 months, as he promised. The world is hopeful. and looking forward to this new man. Even Al-Qaeda appears to be flummoxed. They don't know how to deal with a person who has such worldwide support. He sent an envoy off to the Middle East. He called America's allies, leaders all around the world, to let them know that he was in charge. Here at home, 82% of Americans support the current new president. This is pretty astonishing. We've already had an election where Barack Obama won more votes than any Democratic candidate in 44 years. And Congress did even better. The Democrats beat the Republicans in the House of Representatives when you add up all the votes by more than a 10-point margin. America is ready for change. How will this new president do? How has he done in his first week of office? 1 week down, 408 to go. Well, he is putting out a stimulus package. As detailed in the Washington Post, show it right here, this is Sunday's Post, the Obama recovery plan has a large number of different factors. We can show some of it right here on the screen on the Internet. But as I read it, the stimulus proposal, $820 billion, designed to create 4 million jobs with a spending timeline of 18 months. Maybe we can show the clip, if we could. This is the recovery plan, and the Washington Post lays it out in detail. You have everything from energy to health care to education to infrastructure, all of that in the new plan. Let's talk about some of that plan. We've got energy, doubling renewable energy generating capacity, building more than 3,000 miles of new or modernized electric transmission lines, weatherizing homes, guaranteeing health care for 8.5 million Americans who lose their jobs, increasing federal assistance to protect 20 million people at risk of losing Medicaid eligibility, computerize all Americans' health records within 5 years, renovate in education 10,000 public schools, tax cuts to make college more affordable, doubling the size of the Head Start program, infrastructure, it's not just bridges, it's enhancing security at 90 major ports, 1,300 wastewater projects, 380 drinking water projects, repairing and modernizing thousands of miles of roadways. For Republicans, you've got tax cuts, not just the tax cuts he promised of $1,000 for 95% of working families that he promised in the campaign. He appears to be delaying the end of the Bush tax cuts until the recession is over, extending the child tax credits to parents of 6 million more children, increasing food stamp benefits to more than 30 million, even allowing businesses to take their capital losses now instead of waiting until they have profits over the last 5 years. This is something which few Americans can oppose. 82%, as I said, have supported it. Who can oppose an agenda to get us out of recession, build jobs, build infrastructure? You'd have to be quite a curmudgeon. Well, I've got a curmudgeon sitting right over here to my left. His name is Mike Lane. He's my friend and colleague and the president of Intellifit Strategies. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it here, too. What's not to love? This is an aggressive plan to take on the horrific economy left by Obama's predecessor. You remember him. I think you're still pining away for him, right? It was George something? He's old news now. But the horrible economy that he left us, Obama has hit the ground running. How do you like his first week?
Well, I think he's hit the ground stumbling on the economy. And
why am I surprised you say that?
There are some things in there to like, Mark. I mean, there really are. I'm not one of those people who's going to sit here and tell you, no, absolutely no, we just need nothing but a free market recovery, although that will probably be a faster recovery than what President Obama is planning for us right now. But what I want to do is I want to work with a few of these things, okay? I want to take what he has that's going to help the economy, which is roughly half of what he's proposing. And the other half, it would be nice if we could just jettison it and get rid of it.
Yeah, you don't want any
like
health care for poor people or for children. Mark, that's a bad thing, right?
No, I want health care for children and poor people, but I want it to stand on its own. I don't want to pull a facade, you know, a charade on the American people and call this an economic stimulus.
But it is.
I don't, okay.
But it is. When you do the S-CHIP program, for example, State Children's Health Insurance Program,
right.
What you're doing is you're helping states provide health insurance for kids. Now, that money goes in the economy to doctors and hospitals and everything, just like any other money goes in the economy. But in addition to it, creating jobs, it also helps poor kids get health care.
You know what, Mark? Poor kids are getting health care anyway. There are any number of circumstances, even and including going to the emergency room and getting their health care. This is not going to create a single job. It's not going to be anything in terms of an economic stimulus. It may, on its own merits, be a good program that we should enact and move forward with, but it is not part of the economic stimulus any more than Nancy Pelosi's spending $250 billion on contraceptive aids is an economic stimulus.
$250 million.
Whatever.
Well, there's a huge difference because exactly what Republicans do.
Okay,
you take a tiny thing, $250 million
is less
than 1/3,000th. Of the proposal,
and, why is
and
it
that's
there?
What you're going to complain about. Talk about
the
tail wagging the dog.
I have a lot of
hair on the tail to wag the dog.
Okay, so if it's just a hair wagging the dog, can we just agree we'll get rid of it right now?
You know what? Republicans used to say that they didn't like abortions, that they wanted abortions to be rare. And here is a chance to make abortions more rare, something that I would think Republicans and Democrats could agree on. But the real secret is Republicans claim to be pro-life, claim to be anti-abortion, but they really are as anti-sex.
But
that's why they don't want contraception.
But that's not President Obama's and Speaker Pelosi's argument. Their argument is not that it will reduce abortions. Their argument is that children are a cost, a burden on the state, and we want to reduce costs. In fact, I think the speaker yesterday on George Stephanopoulos' show said reduce costs three different times in a one-minute response. They're not arguing that this is a life situation. They're not arguing that this will make abortions less ubiquitous.
As they will.
What they're saying is, you know what, we just can't afford to have children in America today. What's next, Mark, the handicapped? You know, I mean, can we afford to have...
Wait,
consume services too?
Wait, just a second, Mike. I mean, it's one thing. I understand the pro-life position. I even respect the pro-life position, even though I don't share it. It's one thing to say that you don't want abortions. I understand that. I don't agree, but I understand it. It's quite another thing to say that contraception is somehow terrible for America.
It's not terrible for America. In fact, it's good for America. It just is not an economic stimulus. Why are we putting this stuff into an economic stimulus bill? Let's make this an economic stimulus bill. Let's put Americans back to work, and let's argue about this other $500 billion that the president's trying to slip through there on other things.
$820 billion. If you subtract the condoms that you don't like, you have $819.75 billion.
It's not just the condoms that I don't like, Mark.
So,
It's not just.
And condom also, manufacturers, they have jobs too. So,
you know what, Mark? It's not going to create a single job.
If you put money in the economy, of course it is.
It won't create a single job.
Of course it is.
No.
Whether it's condoms or health care, people make these things. There are people in these industries that create condoms or that are services, doctors, nurses. All of them have jobs. All of them get more money, and they spend it. It hardly matters whether it's a doctor or a manufacturer of cars. The difference is that this is something that would do an additional thing. It would help prevent abortions, which I would think you'd support.
You know what? I have every interest in reducing the amount of abortions in America, and this kind of family planning aid may indeed be a very good thing. It is not an economic stimulus.
It is because spending is an economic stimulus.
No. Consumer spending is the economic stimulus. Maybe that's where we ought to get this discussion going. What is the way to get us out of here? Is it government deficit spending that will burden our children for decades and decades with the $3, $4, $5 trillion that we'll ultimately wind up spending on this? Or is it...